9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
More companies are disclosing details about the diversity of their workforce.
Increasingly, investors are saying, we're putting money on more diverse companies. We're investing more money in companies with a better record and a better pattern of diversity because we think those companies will perform better.
But the data is hard to compare. We'll explain why. And U.S. stocks rebound after last week's turbulence. Plus, how to score a coveted COVID-19 vaccination appointment. It's Monday, March 1st. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. U.S. stocks rallied today as bond markets began to calm down after last week's volatility. The S&P 500 had its best day in 9 months, closing up 2.4%. The Dow climbed 2% and the Nasdaq jumped 3%. Our markets reporter Akane Otani has more.
In the last couple of weeks, of course, we've seen the yield on the 10-year, the 5-year, the 30-year, you name it, the yields on U.S. government bonds rising very substantially in a pretty short period of time. And that had put a lot of pressure on riskier assets like stocks because it sort of fundamentally brings into question whether investors had mispriced their expectations around growth and inflation. But what we saw Monday was actually pretty good data on the manufacturing front, and that sort of helped calm down the sell-off in the bond market. We saw yields sort of retrace a little bit from the levels they had hit last week, and that in turn, I think, helped calm the equity market side of things as well.
The Senate is moving ahead this week with the latest coronavirus aid package without a provision that would increase the minimum wage. Last week, the Senate parliamentarian ruled that Democrats' first proposal, which included an across-the-board wage increase, didn't comply with the chamber's rules. Democrats then tried to rally support for a plan to raise the minimum wage through tax penalties and incentives, but it was deemed too complex and some Senate Democrats were skeptical. The administration of New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has hired a prominent white-collar defense attorney, Elkin Abramowitz. As we reported this morning, Cuomo is facing allegations of sexual harassment from two former aides. The administration is also facing questions over COVID-19 deaths in the state's nursing homes. In January, a state attorney general's office report said the state had undercounted the death toll in some nursing homes by 50%. Cuomo's top aide told lawmakers they delayed releasing information to the Justice Department out of fear that then-President Donald Trump would politicize it. Our Albany reporter Jimmy Vielkind has been following the story.
All of this has taken some shine off of Governor Cuomo, who won national praise and saw his star rise for his early management of the coronavirus pandemic. As the state is passing the one-year anniversary of its first infection, Cuomo is nowhere to be seen. He has not taken questions from the press since last week and had no public appearances scheduled on Monday. Albany lawmakers are openly talking about curtailing some of his powers, and there are even calls for his resignation and impeachment. It's quite a turn for the Democratic governor who has been in office for a decade and has been previously talked about as a presidential candidate.
Former French President Nicolas Sarkozy has been convicted on charges of influence peddling and corruption for trying to bribe a magistrate with a position in Monaco in exchange for confidential information about an inquiry into the finances of his 2007 presidential campaign. Sarkozy was sentenced to 3 years in prison with 2 years suspended. The court recommended he serve the remainder of his sentence under house arrest. Sarkozy's lawyer says he will appeal the ruling. And police in Myanmar have filed charges against Aung San Suu Kyi, the popular leader who has been detained in her home since being ousted in a military coup last month. The additional allegations come after a deadly crackdown on Sunday against protesters demanding her release left at least 18 people dead. Coming up after the break, investors are pushing companies to give more details about diversity in their ranks, but the answers they're getting aren't clear-cut.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
More companies are voluntarily releasing details about diversity in their ranks, including gender and race breakdowns. The push for more transparency is coming from the public and investors. They're hoping that the disclosures could help add substance to pledges made by many executives last year to prioritize diversity in hiring. But it's difficult to compare the data across companies. The Wall Street Journal's special writer Teo Francis and his team took a look at it, and he joins me now. Hi, Teo. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
So, Teo, the Wall Street Journal reviewed more than 160 annual reports filed by S&P 500 companies. Tell us what you found.
We really found a real variety of disclosures. You know, none of these disclosures are mandatory in the sense that companies aren't required to release specific numbers about, you know, race or gender. But increasingly, we're finding that companies are doing that. They are telling investors in their annual reports that they file with securities regulators, you know, X percent of our global workforce is female. Y percent of our U.S. workforce usually is African-American or Hispanic or white. The problem is this is in a wide variety of ways. They might give just gender for all employees or just gender and race for their board members. Or they might break race down into white and people of color, or they might break it down in a more granular way into, you know, white, Asian, Native American, Hispanic, Black, and so on. So there's really no systematic, consistent way that companies are doing this, but more and more companies are doing it.
Because of the way the data is reported, as you just explained, does that make it challenging to get a comprehensive picture here? What can you tell us about how we draw conclusions from the data, especially since it's released differently company to company?
Sure. The biggest challenge is that it's hard to say anything in aggregate, right? I can't tell you that for S&P 500 companies that have filed their annual report so far, X percent of the workforce is Black, Y percent is white, this proportion is female. I just can't do that because not all of them report their full company breakdown. Not all of them categorize employees the same way. They might say, you know, our executives are vice presidents and above, or they might start at a level higher or a level lower. So it really gets difficult to do a lot across all companies. What's more possible is often looking at companies within the same sector or the same industry. So one of the examples we give in the article is that we were able to look at three different consumer products companies, Church & Dwight, Colgate-Palmolive, and Procter & Gamble. And all three of those companies have disclosed demographic information, but in very different ways. So Church & Dwight really only discloses one data point in their annual report, whereas Colgate discloses a lot more. And then Procter & Gamble doesn't disclose anything in its annual report, which came out last fall, but they do have a separate report in which they provide a lot of information. So just the sheer, just the volume of information, the volume of data is very different between these three pretty similar companies. So Church & Dwight just said, hey, 41% of our global workforce was female in 2020. Colgate-Palmolive gives pretty much the same number, 40% of global employees, but also 40% of executives. And then they also say that 67% of U.S. workers are white. Procter & Gamble gives dozens of details breaking down by kind of position, executives versus general employees versus other kinds of employees, and also by gender and then also by race.
There are also companies that choose not to report this information at all.
Well, so this isn't something that companies have to report, and it isn't also something that companies have to collect beyond numbers that they are required to report to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Talking with consultants and attorneys who have helped companies with these disclosures, they say there's another aspect to it, which is that companies really are trying to tell their best story, right? These documents are disclosures for legal and investing purposes, but at the same time, they're also a public face of the company. And so companies probably want to give the best picture they can.
Many companies are being asked about their efforts to recruit and maintain a more diverse workforce, and not doing so could hurt their chances of maybe attracting the best candidates. You talked about sort of putting the best story forward here, and that's a pretty important part of it.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, you'd think companies, increasingly diverse society and world in many ways, want to kind of paint that picture in a way that will help them increase recruiting. They also, by the way, care deeply about what investors think, and investors are increasingly asking for this information. Remember, this isn't a government mandate that companies have to disclose these numbers. Investors are asking for it. The markets are asking them to put this information out there, and increasingly investors are saying, we're putting money on more diverse companies. We're investing more money in companies with a better record and a better pattern of diversity because we think those companies will perform better. Companies, the argument goes, that represent their customer base, that represent the broader society, are going to do better. That companies with more diverse backgrounds among their executives and employees and managers are going to have more creative ideas, are going to have a wider range of ideas to choose from, are going to have a wider range of backgrounds informing their decisions, and that's going to lead to better performance. So this is really an investment issue as much as anything else.
Tao, is the pressure that investors and even the general public are putting on companies to be good corporate citizens changing?
I think a lot has changed in the last year. I mean, since the death of George Floyd while in police custody in Minnesota and the subsequent protests, a lot of companies have come out and very publicly said that they are making diversity and inclusion a priority, that they are making it a priority to tackle systemic racism, and that they are hoping to really improve the diversity of their workforces. And it's a common mantra in, you know, executive circles and management circles that you don't attend to something unless it's measured. So a very first step in trying to tackle diversity is to measure it and understand where any given company is doing a good job by its own standards and where it isn't.
Wall Street Journal special writer Tao Francis. Tao, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And finally, scoring an appointment to get the COVID-19 vaccine has been riddled with challenges. It's not just the limited supply of vaccines. The websites are all different, state to state or even county to county. They weren't built to handle the traffic they're getting. And on top of that, there are different rules depending on where you live. Our personal tech columnist Joanna Stern compares it to the Hunger Games or trying to get a ticket to a Beyonce concert. But she has some tips to get your shot.
Number one, look at your local Facebook groups or Twitter accounts to see if they're posting the most recent appointments at certain locations, especially the pharmacy locations. Number two, prep your web browser. Get all your information into autofill, your name, address, email address, phone number, date of birth. That's going to help you save time when you score the appointment. You can just click, get all your information in there right away. Number three is you can try some web browser extensions that refresh web pages for you. Or you can try something called Visual Ping. This is a site that will watch websites for you and alert you when there is a change to it.
For more tips, check out Joanna's story and video on our website, wsj.com. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.